Okay, I think that clock ticked over, so let me go ahead and start the presentation. And yes, you all know this one. So what's the official title on the thing? Data collection? I don't know. They changed it on me. So here's the real title of our session. Dude, Where's My Data? For most of the Europeans, and I'm sure Kim, I don't know if he ever saw Dude, Where's My Car? But you know, I thought maybe we could go get tattoos or something, but I don't know. Maybe that was just a drunken Vegas
I actually have a
dream.
phone application of Dude, Where's My Car?
Oh, there you go. So anyway, my name's Jason Sandys. You can kind of read the information there. I have no idea what Kim, and this is Kim Opelfens, I have no idea what his title is. But ultimately, we work with a lot of customers on a day-to-day basis. We answer lots of forum questions, so we see lots of pain. On occasion, we cause pain, but I don't know if that's fun or not. Sometimes it is, I guess. Anyway, we're here to talk to you, hopefully, and give you some good stuff about just data in general in Configuration Manager. All right, so this is a real-world scenario here. And the funny part about this is it was a little bit abstract when I wrote this. Yeah, I heard questions very similar to this on a day-to-day basis, once again, at customers. We see it all the time in the forums. But someone actually came up to me yesterday, and it was like verbatim, this little bubble here on the left. He said, "My manager and management want me to start reporting on," and he was talking about update compliance. But it was exactly, verbatim, and I was just like, "Wow, did you all like already read my slides or something?" But how many of you have not heard this from your manager, right? And that's obviously a rhetorical question because I'm sure everyone in here has. Reporting is, and data in Config Manager are the keys to the kingdom, right? At the end of the day, if you're collecting all this great data and you're not doing anything with it, well, what's the point? What's the point of having that massive SQL database that's there? Of course, that not so pointy-haired boss and his boss's boss and all the way up the chain don't understand that, yeah, there's so much data there at times. I'm not sure how to get to it. I'm not sure how to put certain things together. I'm not even sure if there's a document out there that will help me find the exact nugget that I need, right? This is all business intelligence type stuff. This is data mining. It's about figuring these kind of things out. And at the end of the day, if you can go back to your boss and answer those questions, you're gonna be more than just that technical asset. You're gonna be that person that can help him solve his business challenges, that can solve the company's business challenges and answer those business questions. So we're gonna look at a few things here. We're gonna look at what's possible natively in Config Manager. There's a lot of things you can do outside of Config Manager. We're gonna look at kind of some fringe things, some things you may know, some things you may have seen, some things you're probably maybe afraid of doing. So, there's a lot of simple things that we can do, and there's a lot of complex things we can do. So we're gonna look at a whole bunch of those. We're gonna look at how data gets collected. Very misunderstood about how data actually comes into Config Manager, into the database. We're gonna look at extracting it, showing that report, right? At the end of the day, if your boss doesn't have that report in his hands, he doesn't get it emailed to him in some form or fashion that he can then forward on to the CIO, the CFO, whoever, it's almost useless at that point. And of course, business value. Now, I can't tell you what business value is. That's ultimately a decision for you guys to make or, data for you to extract and, like I said, give to your boss. So we'll kind of skirt around that issue because we can't tell you exactly how to fulfill that one. But it's there, and you need to keep that one in your mind all the time, right? If it's not an inbox report, it's probably something that someone's come and asked you for that you can help them out with their job with. And at the end of the day, what's your job as a subordinate? It's to help your manager get his job done. This is kind of the business slide here. Kind of the same type of thing, right? So someone comes to you and asks you that question, "Where are all the PSTs on my network?" Right? How many of you not heard that one? That one's like the most common one that's out there. Because people love to hate PSTs, and of course, employees love PSTs. So the thing you have to think about, though, is why are they asking me this question, right? You have to start digging down, figuring out where's this question coming from? Did the CEO ask it? Did someone else in my organization ask it? Who do I need to target? Who do I need to make sure that I'm answering the right question to? So are they really looking for all the PSTs? Are they looking for the PSTs on the file servers? Are they looking for the PSTs that are only in use? Are they looking for PSTs, that someone stashed on an optical drive somewhere? You got to dig down. You've got to really uncover those kind of things, and that's what business intelligence is all about. And so if you're able to mirror the ability to have some business intelligence or your knowledge about business intelligence, which will hopefully give you some nuggets on here, then you're going to become more than that technical asset in your organization. Okay, the wonderful four types of ways to really get data into Config Manager, and these are the four that we're going to go through. Software inventory is the first one. I hate this name because it's not software inventory. Kind of that first big red X one right there, right? It doesn't actually inventory software. The funny thing is the documentation actually says this. It inventories files, right? So one of the changes from Config Manager 2007 to Config Manager 2012 was they no longer actually inventory star.exe, right? So now all of a sudden all of your software reports aren't populated anymore. So is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? I think it's a great thing because just because an exe exists on my system doesn't mean that application's installed, right? Just because I have word.exe on my system doesn't mean I have Microsoft Word installed. And so that's all software inventory can ever tell me. It's going out there, it's looking at all of the files that are on my system or a select subset. And I'm going to stress the select subset. This is one of the things that, if you've ever followed any of Sherry's stuff, she stresses massively because in their organization, they have hundreds of thousands of systems that they need to collect this information on. So if they went out and did star.exe from every hard drive in their environment, their database would balloon, and of course John would probably freak out. So that's not something you want to do. Of course you're putting stress on that client system when you're collecting all those files also. So you want to be very targeted about where you're going. But at the end of the day, the thing is, it's not software. You're simply collecting the files that are there. So that's that kind of note at the bottom there. And I'm going to switch over, and I'm on the wrong demo system. I've got to find my number. There we go. So I'm going to actually hop into Config Manager here and show you really quick, right? 2012, of course, has the new client settings piece. So we're doing this in a little bit of a different place. We're actually going to be creating client settings to do these kind of things. So here in my environment, and I will zoom it as needed, we can go ahead and do a properties on my client settings. And there we go. And I don't have software inventory checked, right? This is a granular client settings. This isn't my default default client settings. Kind of like group policy, best practice. Don't mess with the default stuff. Leave it intact. Go ahead and create extra client settings so that you can now go in and manipulate and, of course, restore back to whatever the default was and have some essentially a baseline, just like the default policies in Active Directory. Once you kind of muddy those up, it's really difficult to get them back unmuddied again. So that's exactly what I'm doing here. I'm going to go ahead and check software inventory. And I know in the back that one's a little bit hard to see, so I'll zoom in real quick. Right, nothing spectacular to see there, but it's just a checkbox. And I'm going to go ahead and click on software inventory. And I'm going to go ahead and click on the set types. And here's where I can go ahead and set which files that I actually want to collect. All right, so I want to be real explicit about what I put in this box. If I want to collect a DLL, great, that's no problem. Just don't put star.dll in there, right? How many DLLs are on a normal Windows system? You've probably got thousands. I've never gone and counted. Sherry probably has. But you've got thousands. And now if you multiply that by the number of systems in your organization, are you ever going to care about half of those DLLs? No, right? There's no way you're going to. But if you have a specific one that you need to check for, go ahead and put it in this box and make sure you scope it to exactly where that's going to be. So I have this nice little location path here. All client hard disks, or I can actually put in a variable, right, like percent winder percent. So I can scope it down, or if I know it's going to be in a specific program files directory. If I'm looking for PSTs, do I really need to look in the Windows directory? Do I need to look in other locations? Am I excluding it to, or am I constraining myself to just the user's profiles directory? Make sure you scope it down. We don't want to be pulling all that data from every client system every single time. Okay. So the other thing that goes along with the PSTs, and this is just kind of a quick thing in here, right? If someone's asking you about PSTs in your environment, are your users storing PSTs on the network, right? That's one of the classic examples. It's generally a bad thing to do, right? Microsoft has told people for a long time, it's not supported, don't do it. Of course, every user still does it. Well, software inventory is not going to answer that question for you, right? Unless you're actually inventorying your file servers. Software inventory runs as the client agent. which of course can only see that local system. It can't go across the network. It doesn't know about any of the user's mapped drives. It's not going to be able to see anything that user has on their shared folders. So you're not going to be able to do it. You're going to be able to do it potentially on the file server, but then you're probably going to run into that four-hour timeout. And how do I know that? Because I went through this exercise recently with a customer, and they were dead set on having this done. And then we started looking at the log files, and they had umpteen gazillion files on some of their file servers. And in about 4 hours, they had only made it through about 10% of that file server. And it's a hard-coded limit. There's no way for you to actually change it. It's a bad question to ask, right? You want to start digging into other things. And so you have to know all these constraints when you're going to set these kind of things up. Software inventory does great for what it does, looking at specific files on client machines. Anything outside of that is probably a very bad use of software inventory. And I actually already showed you that demo, so. And now on to the next one, and I'll give it over to Kim for that one.
So I'll talk about another way of doing data collection and getting data into Configuration Manager. Before I do, Jason has been going on about software inventory for quite a while. I'll quickly translate that for a couple of people in the room that don't really know what software inventory is. He actually means software inventory. That's what he talks about. So I'm going to talk about hardware inventory and as another way of collecting data into Configuration Manager. And just as Jason said, he dislikes the name of software inventory. I dislike the name for hardware inventory just as well, because again, it doesn't match what it actually does. Hardware inventory does not inventory hardware, which is kind of silly because that's what the name kind of implies. And it doesn't require you to do much configuration-wise. Hardware inventory allows you to collect data through WMI. That's what we do. And that's what Config Manager does with a lot of its data. A lot of its data is either WMI-based or stored in WMI, which is nice because there's a lot of things that are already readily available in WMI. Now, I've done a presentation, I think it's about 3 years ago by now, on just WMI for Configuration Manager admins, in which I used the quote, WMI, and the M in WMI stands for magic. And I still stand by that. There's pretty nice things you can do with WMI. It's pretty discoverable, so we'll do some of that during this session, because the session was, where is my data? So we'll help you find out where the data is actually stored in WMI, because that's one of the challenges we actually have. There's a lot of data there, but how do I get to it? How do I know where it's stored? I have a keyboard. All right. So what's in with WMI, and how do I find it? Well, more and more stuff is being stored in WMI. Historically, a lot of data was stored in registry, and we still see a lot of data being stored in registry, but more and more data actually becomes stored in WMI. There's more and more products that store their configuration and their information in WMI. If data is stored in registry, we actually have ways of accessing the registry through WMI providers to get to the registry data from WMI, so that's fine as well. But what data is in there? There's data in there about hardware. There's data in there about add remove programs, and that's probably one of the reasons we don't like it to be called hardware inventory, because add remove programs has nothing to do with hardware whatsoever. WMI has a provider system, so you can actually write providers to get to data and make sure the data is accessible through WMI. Right here in the front, we have Jose Zander, who actually wrote a blog post on building your own providers.
Roger.
He's here. And he actually wrote a provider sample that you can actually just download to make sure that local administrators, whoever is a local administrator on your box, is just accessible through WMI. All you have to do is install that WMI provider, and you can access that information through WMI. So there's a lot of ways to actually add data to WMI and make sure it can be extended. And then there's MSDN. A lot of the classes and information that's available in WMI are actually explained on the MSDN website on how they actually work. Now, how do you get to that information in WMI? Well, there's multiple ways on actually accessing that data. There's obviously VBScript and PowerShell or other programming languages. You can go through VB.NET or C#. And you can use the WMI command line, which is available on every single Windows system. If you go to a command prompt, you can actually type in WMIC and start querying away. And then my personal favorite is WebM Test, because that's available on every single system as well and provides you with an interface to access WMI. So accessing and finding WMI data, and I'll show you some of the things I do to figure out where the data is actually being stored. And one of the things I did at the last MVP Summit was actually write a tiny little script that's called Search WMI, because that's one of the challenges I've had in the past. Well, I know this is stored in WMI somewhere, but how do I actually get to it? And I wrote a tiny little script called Search WMI that goes through a WMI namespace. And you can specify the WMI namespace in the script for now. I'll be modifying it slightly and creating a blog post on it next week so that you can work with parameters. But what this does, it recursively goes... Yeah, it searches WMI too. That queries itself. Seriously.
Do the up arrow twice.
I can't type.
I
feel like guard. He's not here, right? And what this does is just cycles through all the classes, properties, namespace, qualifiers that are in the namespace that's in the script, and the script now goes through the root CCM policy machine configuration, and it dumps it all out. And we have tools that can actually search WMI, like SimStudio, but all those tools stop at searching in the names of the namespace, the name of the class, the name of the properties. There's no tool out there that can actually search for values in WMI. So what this script does, it enumerates it all and just dumps it out and has the actual values in there as well, as you can see. If you run this on a large namespace, and I'm just doing this on a subset of our client side, it's going to run for a while. Right? But it'll dump everything out. What I tend to do with the script lately, is pipe this out to text file. And then whatever value you think you're looking for, you can just go into the text file and look it up, and it'll tell you exactly what namespace, what class, and what property holds the value you were searching for. So that's one of the ways to get to your WMI data that's most likely there, but might be a little bit challenging to find, like the needle in the haystack. This is going to help you out in that respect. And I've run it on the complete root CCM namespace. It'll generate a file that's a couple of megabytes big, and then you can open it up with your favorite text editor and just go in there and look at that. So that's one of the ways to get true data in WMI. One of the other things I've been doing on Windows 7 and later systems is we actually have WMI tracing enabled from Windows 7 and above. Actually, Windows Vista and above, but, well, Windows 7 and above is what most people use. So we actually have a log file in the event viewer that you can use. And to make sure that you can use that, you have to open up Event Viewer. And Event Viewer view, I need to go up. If you go to Event Viewer, you actually have a view option you can add that's called Show Analytic, whatever it's been pronounced like, and debug logs. And that enables it to give you access to the WMI tracing log. And WMI tracing is always here in the back. And that allows you to enable tracing for WMI. If you go to WMI, you can enable the trace log. And if I now open Software Center on this box, and I do something like changing the business hours. I work hard, so I work on Saturday as well. No, that's not true. I just don't work on Friday. I'm European.
Or July.
Or July.
Or August.
Unfortunately, I cannot put that in. But if I do that, and I go back, and I disable the log, it'll show me everything it did while I was doing that in WMI. Right. So you can go over this, and you can see the individual items specifying what was actually all done during the time I enabled that trace log. So it's not a needle in a haystack anymore. It can take you a while to go through the individual items. If you know a little bit of what you might be looking for, then you can obviously search in the event viewer. It allows you to type. And that'll tell you exactly, again, what namespace and what query it was running against WMI to get through that actual data. So that's another way of finding out, if I do this, this, and this in this interface, what's going on WMI-wise, this is another way to get to that juicy information.
Juicy.
Juicy. So how does hardware inventory data collection actually work in the back end? Well, we used to have two text files that were actually being used to define what you wanted to inventory. In Config Manager 2012, that is slightly different the way they are actually made available to the client. One of those files, the configuration MOF file, still exists and is actually attached to a client policy, so it's actually embedded in the client policy. The other one is actually translated into a policy. And then client policy is obviously handed over to the management point. Now, if you look at the management point is going to send the hardware inventory policy to the client, and that's going to be stored in the WMI repository on the client. Right? And it's actually on the client, and right, client actually has a namespace called root CCM policy machine actual configuration. Specifically for hardware inventory, you'll see you have a subclass there that's called inventory data item. That'll tell you exactly what classes and what properties of that class are going to be reported. So if you want to look and see, I've made some modifications to hardware inventory, to my policy, I want to see whether this client system already knows it needs to report that up, you can actually just go to that particular class and see whether you have an instance of that class being made ready for reporting. On the other hand, we have the configuration MOF that was actually attached or added to the policy and just embedded in the policy. That will be extracted from the policy, and the client will actually run a MOF comp, which is a tool to actually make modifications to WMI as well, and store that information in WMI as well in a slightly different manner. Once we have that, the client knows what to inventory, so he'll send it up to the management point. The management point will then translate the XML it gets into a MOF file again, send that on to the site server, and the site server will then inject that into the database. Right. So we originally had two MOF files. We had an smsdev.mof. SMF.mof doesn't exist natively anymore in Config Manager 2012. It's been translated into a system that actually turns it into a policy. Right? But that actually defines what we want to have reported. Right? What do you want to be part of your hardware inventory to be sent up to the management point? And then we have the configuration MOF, which is actually attached to the policy, and that actually creates and generates additional data classes and registers WMI providers. You have a way of registering WMI providers. So if you go and download Roger's local admin provider, you could actually put that in the configuration.mof, and that way we can actually get added as a provider on all of your systems. Right? Alternatively, Roger was nice enough to build an MSI to actually install the provider so you could do it through software distribution as well. And then WMI classes, most of the information you want from hardware inventory is actually in root EMV2, which is the default namespace for most of the WMI data. But there's also a sub-namespace there that's root CMV2 SMS, and that used to hold all the reporting classes, right, and the classes that need to be reported. In Config Manager 2012, apparently it only contains the reporting classes for things that have their own dedicated provider. If they use a standard OS-based WMI provider, then the reporting classes are no longer there. It's just for items that have a specific provider. And then, obviously, you have the data classes that actually have the real data, the real meat that you want to send up to the server that can get their information from just about anywhere. I'm not going to learn. So hardware inventory logs, there's a couple of log files that are interesting. We have the inventory agent log on the client side that will actually tell you what was sent up. And there's a server log file that will tell you what was added to the database called the data loaderpoint log. There's actually another log file for the in-between action on the management point. That's called the management point underscore hardware inventory log that we probably should add. And that's the three log files that actually tell you what is going to be in your database reporting-wise from hardware inventory. And most of you are SMS administrators, so most of you know these tiny little text files we can do to do some cheating, like the no-sms-on-drive.sms. For hardware inventory, there's actually a tiny little text files you can add to the Windows inventory temp folder that's called archive reports, archive underscore reports.sms, and that'll prevent the temp XML file that hardware inventory generates from being deleted after it was sent up to the management point. So that way you can look at the XML at the client side and see what was actually in it. And then there's another piece of information I wanted to share with you on using WMI and getting data out of it. Because we already talked about how to do it client-side with the script and the tracing. No, keyboard's not working. All right.
Move on.
I'll see whether I can figure this out by just using mouse. But one of the important things, server side, to figure out where your data is at, is actually in a log file called the SMS provider log file. The SMS provider log file is great, because that's what everything that happens in the database actually passes through WMI and the SMS provider. And hence, it tells you everything it does in the database. So since I can't filter, here we go. Here I have an example. Everything it does is actually getting logged to the SMS provider. And as you see, I'll try and zoom it, but without a keyboard, that's going to be challenging. But there's a line in this particular log file that says it's executing WQL, which is the WMI query language, and it shows you the select statement it's running in WMI. And what the SMS provider will always do is it will show you a line right underneath executing the SQL statement that's actually getting the exact same data but from the database, because everything we do in Config Manager on the site server, we get it from the database through the SMS provider, so we need to talk WQL to the provider, and the provider will talk SQL to the database, get that data, and get it back to us. But SMS provider actually tells you both commands. So once you know where data is stored in WMI on the site server, you can actually just execute that command in WebMTest or WMIC or through VBScript or your own preferred method, and then go into the SMS provider log and see, okay, so this is exactly where it was stored. Another nice way of using the SMS provider log is just opening the admin UI and doing an action in the admin UI. The admin UI needs to fetch the data through the SMS provider as well, and it will, again, log in the SMS provider where it is stored in WMI and where it is stored in SQL. So that's another thing I quickly wanted to demonstrate. And that's it for hardware inventory.
All right. So asset intelligence is the next piece. And ultimately, asset intelligence isn't really that different from hardware inventory. It's a layer on top of hardware inventory. It's a layer on top of software metering. It does not use software inventory at all. So that's one of those interesting kind of quirks out there, because asset intelligence at its core will tell you lots of hardware things. It'll tell you software things also, but it doesn't use software inventory. So that kind of goes back to the definition of what software inventory actually is. So you obviously have to turn on a couple of things for asset intelligence. It's not on out of the box. But at the end of the day, it's really just about leveraging hardware inventory to collect some valuable data, and then having a set of reports that will actually do some intelligence on top of that data that gets collected. And of course, there's some software metering in there, so you can do some interesting things like reclamation of software. So you can now, of course, you know, if you have 10 licenses of AutoCAD in your environment and you figure out only 5 are needed, well, as expensive as AutoCAD is, right, getting rid of those 5 licenses is a good thing and will ultimately save you lots of money. So let's hop into the demo and we'll see if the keyboard is working again. And if not, that's okay. So once again, asset intelligence is configured through the client settings. So we're going to go into the client settings here. And you actually have to enable it. I went to the wrong one there, but it's going to extend the hardware inventory. So that was really the point of this piece. So I'll show you this first. I'm showing you this backwards. If we go to our hardware inventory, and we actually look, if I don't uncheck it, if we actually look at the classes that are here, you'll see a lot of ones that are specific to asset intelligence. Now, the great part of asset intelligence here in the documentation, it's going to explicitly tell you which ones you need for which reports. So this is kind of the extending hardware inventory a little bit, and that's exactly what asset intelligence does and what you can do also. So you can see there's lots of things unchecked by default. But if I come down to installed software, there you are, installed applications. And yes, the keyboard is not doing very well, so unfortunately I can't zoom in on there. But those are actually extra classes that Asset Intelligence added into hardware inventory, so it's actually going to get pulled back, and now Asset Intelligence can populate the different data that's in Config Manager. So let's actually go to the Asset Intelligence node. And that's under Assets and Compliance. And I don't know why. I always have a hard time figuring that out because it says Compliance. And Asset Intelligence is right there. But it is there. And so if we go in and we look at what software or what information actually gets pulled back, this is where we're actually going to get our real software that gets pulled back. We're going to be able to see different types of things in here. So one of the things I do when I go into customers a lot of time, the very first thing I'll do, and I don't think I have any on any of my demo systems, but I go in and I sort by category. And there is a security threat category in here. So there's a security one. You can see that one. But there's actually a security threat category in here. And I go through and I see, oh, look, you guys actually have this in your environment. Did you know that? And number one is always the coupon toolbar. So I'm sure that's wonderful, useful in most environments. But, you know, most people just sit there and shake their head and they go, yeah, we know we have that. But there's always other interesting things that pop up in there that asset intelligence is just going to identify just by turning on a few different things. So how do we turn on those classes that I was talking about? It's really just about clicking on Asset Intelligence and clicking Edit Inventory Classes. And as you can see here, there's just a bunch of classes. And these are the exact ones I just showed you in Hardware Inventory. So these are obviously the WMI names. And if they get translated into friendly display names that you then can go find in Hardware Inventory. So you can kind of turn them on in both places. But this is the place where you really need to start and enable these kind of things. So for that data that I just showed you specifically, and I found this out last night when my data wasn't actually populating, first thing, you do need the installed software. And this one's going to be really hard to read. Don't worry about reading it. Go look on your console at home. But if you actually do the tooltip over any one of these classes, it'll tell you which reports. So there's the whole set of asset intelligence reports we'll look at in a second. It'll tell you which reports each one of those classes needs to be enabled on. Right? So if you don't enable that class, you're not going to have those or data for those reports available. So pretty easy to do. You can go in and select exactly which ones you want. So for the data that I just showed you in the console, it's really just this installed software. So there are actually a couple of these that are on by default. I don't remember what they are right now. But if you go into your console, you'll see explicitly which ones they are. I think it's the system console usage and the system console user. but you do need to go in there and enable these explicitly to get that data back into Asset Intelligence. Now, the other thing that tripped me up last night, and this is new for 2012, if we actually go over to our site, and we go into our sites, and we look at our, I like my right click still, my hierarchy settings, or my site maintenance, because I never know where that's out of the toolbar. There is actually a new task in here, and I turned the keyboard on and off, and no joy. You have to go in here and make sure that this summarization task runs. So this is what was tripping me up. That specific summarization task runs every night at midnight. So thank God I was actually trying to troubleshoot this at about 11:55 last night, so I only had to wait for 5 minutes. And until this summarization task actually ran, I didn't have any data populated. So like I said, this is new for 2012. I don't really know if there was a summarization task in 2007. I don't remember. I don't remember ever having to wait for that data to get populated, but that is something a little bit new in 2012, and it's popped up on the forums. So you'll actually have data in the reports, but you won't have data in the console, and you'll sit there scratching your head wondering why. The data will come back, you'll look at hardware inventory, the data's there, but it's still not in the console, and then boom, you come back in the next day and it's there. This is exactly why, is this maintenance task that runs every night. Now, one of the other things that software or that Asset Intelligence can do for you is you can add extra categories or extra labels to software. And I don't remember, let's see here, we'll sort by label one. I put one in here last night. And we'll sort the other way. There it is. Bad software. Right? So I have no idea what this is. This was just a piece that I installed. So I added this custom label to bad software, or to this FlySpeed SQL query. As I click off. There you go. And so I added on the custom labels tab here bad software. So the question, this is kind of a business question once again, what software out there in my environment do I not want to have? Or are blacklisted, are pieces of software that users shouldn't have? How do I categorize those kind of things? Right? So really the real question is, how do I get rid of bad software in my environment? That's the typical manager question. So the question that results from that is, well, first, identify what they are, right? There's no way that Config Manager is going to necessarily identify those for you, except for maybe those security threat ones. But there may be other things in your environment that you simply don't want to have for licensing reasons, for whatever reason. So you can create whatever label that you specifically want, choose it in the dropdown for each one of these. And now if I go over to my reports, and I've got to find the reporting node. There we go. Oh yeah, don't click on that reporting node. Have you all figured that one out? It takes forever to populate typically, even on quick systems. So if you just click on the subsection of the reports, those usually come back a little bit quicker. But there's definitely a whole handful of reports that are in here. And if we scroll down, first we see all of our hardware inventory reports. Remember, once again, these are reports that Asset Intelligence is adding some intelligence onto that data that came back from either hardware inventory, well, it's all hardware inventory, there's some software metering that's actually in there also. There's our licensing reports, our hardware reports. There's some metering reports in here. And all the ones starting at about 10 have software titles with specific multiple custom labels defined, software titles with a specific custom label defined. And now, really, with a little bit of effort, all I did was go in and tag that one specific application that got identified. And now I have a canned report, right? I don't even have to do anything special. And all of a sudden, I can tell you exactly which computers that bad software is on. So real quick and easy, an easy way to answer that relatively common business question of where software or what bad software is actually in my environment. And now I can come up with strategies to uninstall it using the app model with collection building, or just going and you know telling people you shouldn't have that software, things like that. Asset Intelligence isn't perfect, as some people will attest to. But it does a good job. One of the other classes that was in there, and this is a new thing, I'm hoping to see this start popping up more. It's something that Microsoft has really been on the bandwagon with. Adobe, some other organizations have really jumped onto, is actually adding a specific tag to software. So it's essentially an XML file that gets dropped when an application gets installed. And now based upon that specific tag, Config Manager can pick that up and we can definitively tell you what application is actually installed instead of actually having to do any intelligence around it. Instead of having to look for these key markers, which are going to be different for every application, there's going to be one standard key marker. And so they added that in Service Pack 1 to actually be able to do that. And so as hopefully most vendors start getting on that bandwagon, Asset Intelligence data is going to become very, very valuable because it's going to become accurate because that's what the vendors are actually going to tell you that is happening. Oh, and I just showed you that one.
And then next part is on compliance settings. And that's one of the reasons we didn't like them changing the title on us on data collection, because compliance settings in this particular part of our presentation is not about collecting data. It's specifically about not collecting the data. That's in general what we want to do with compliance settings. And we added it in here in our presentation because not collecting data can be an incredibly good thing. So if people come up with a particular business question, can you tell me whether, and then whatever the question at hand is, one of the things that should be a natural reflex for a Config Manager administrator is, what are you going to do with that data? Especially if it's a large amount of data, multiply that by several thousands of clients. That can be a lot of data that you're adding to your database. What are you going to do with it? And you'll see in a lot of the questions you'll get in that particular instance is that the question is generally about, I want to know a certain value in the registry. Right? What do you need it for? Well, I want to know whether that value is particularly for at this point in time. Right? Well, if the entire reason for collecting the data is to report afterwards on what the value of that data is and to see whether it is in accordance to what you expected it was, then compliance settings might be the better answer. If you want a certain registry key to have a value for, well then just use compliance settings and make sure that the value is actually for. There's no need to collect the data in that particular registry key. I just want to make sure it's for. That's what compliance setting is for. So it's for getting all of those information and making sure it actually has the proper value without storing all that data in your Configuration Manager database. Because you don't need it. You don't want to report on it. You just want to act on it. If you have a question that ultimately comes back to, I want to act on certain data if it's not within the boundaries of what I thought was the correct value, then I want to be able to change this. Then compliance settings is actually what you're looking for, as opposed to hardware inventory or even software inventory for whatever reason. So that's why we added that in here. It's not about data collection, but it is part of our original session topic, where is my data?
And I'm up. I've almost got the keyboard working again. Wonderful Bluetooth. But that's okay. Hopefully it'll be up by the time I get back to the demos. So really at the end of the day, right, we want to get everything back into SQL. So remember that little flow chart that we had, that wonderful graphic that Kim showed there. That was all about getting the data back into SQL Server. So there's a subset of data on each client, right? Obviously that client's data is on there. But you're not going to get this holistic view. So if we want to just look at pieces and parts, we can definitely go to the client itself. But at the end of the day, it's all in SQL Server. We love SQL Server, and there's lots of different ways to get SQL data out. So kind of a few general things here about SQL Server in general. SQL views, I think most people know that. Don't use the tables, right? That's what views are all about. Views are guaranteed not to change. They're like a contract between the developers and you. I'm not going to change the views, but if you're querying the tables and they change something in the table, everything you've just done has probably broken. Now, between Config Manager 2007, 2012, heck, all the way back to SMS 2.0, most of that stuff's not changed. But you never know, right? They can decide to change something on you. So you want to make sure you do the views. And all those changes that they do are always going to be reflected in those views, so you're never going to have to take account of any of those kind of changes in the database schema. The big frowny face up there is kind of one that, you know, people ask for documentation. This is great. If you've ever looked at the Config Manager database, and we'll look at it here in a second, it's got lots of views. It's got lots of stored procedures. It's got lots of functions. It's got lots of tables. It's got lots of security identifiers. It's got lots of stuff, right? It's a big database, even with no real data actually in it. So unfortunately, they haven't put out any documentation to help guide you around in that one. But there is the 2007 SQL views. So that's the actual links there at the bottom. So you can grab the slide deck or you can go search. So there's two ways. You can view those online or you can download those. Well, the same question came up in the MyIT forum list recently. And kind of the same canned answer came up. Well, a PFE, Russ Rimmerman, actually came up with a script. Nothing overly difficult. I'll kind of show you a subset of that script here in a second. But it'll actually dump everything. So very similar to Kim's script. It's not actually dumping data, but it's dumping all the tables. It's dumping all the views into an Excel spreadsheet. He actually made the Excel spreadsheet available on his blog post also that you can go download. Now, that doesn't necessarily tell you relationships. It doesn't tell you what data is supposed to be where. The 2007 documentation will generally tell you that because most of those things are the same. Not everything, but most of those things are the same. So ultimately, you kind of have to do some spelunking of your own. You have to be not afraid. And I guess that's one of the main points here. Don't be afraid of digging into some of these things. Don't be afraid of digging into WMI on a client and breaking a client, right? And even on the SQL Server database, if you are a little bit timid there, make a backup copy. It's not a big deal. Mount it somewhere else onto some other SQL Server that you have sitting there. And then go digging around. You're not going to screw anything up, definitely, when you do those kind of things. There's different ways to search also. So SQL Management Studio itself has a filter in it. There's a script that Kim and I debated showing. I don't have it here. We might post it. It's not a script that we wrote. We sent it over to Steve Thompson, and he just kind of cringed a little bit. Just because when you run it, it does exactly what Kim's script does as far as searching the entire WMI repository, but it'll actually search the entire SQL Server database for a specific value or dump all the values. That's great in a lab environment, and maybe if you're working in a lab environment, great, go ahead and do something like that. But in a production environment, yeah, you know, when you've got production things going on, that's not a load that your SQL Server explicitly needs to have on it. So there's also this translation that needs to happen, right? So definitely talked about where the data all is in hardware inventory. But at the end of the day, like I said, it gets into SQL Server. So how do I know what was in hardware inventory? Where is that at now in the database? So these are just a handful of the mappings. As you'll see, I'll scroll by, or if you've ever dug through SQL Management Studio and looked at all the different views that are there, a lot of these different views have different prefixes on them or some type of identifier so you can figure out exactly where that data came from or what that data actually is. The two that trip people up a lot are the GS and the HS, right, the history. So most people don't realize Config Manager keeps a history of all that stuff that it pulls back from hardware inventory by default for 90 days. So don't use the HS unless you're truly after historical data. And of course, if you use HS, don't scratch your head that not all the data's there, right? Because not everything's changed, so it hasn't moved over to the history tables yet or the history views. So always use GS. Configuration items, right? They've actually added service manager pieces in there, so that's an interesting one that's in there. Asset intelligence, all that data that those reports are using, of course, it's in the database. So you can get at that data. You can go look at that data yourself to see exactly what's there when you go off creating your own reports. Console queries are a little bit of a side from actual using SQL reports, but so many people, they forget that this thing is there, right? It's kind of buried now. It's under the monitoring workspace, I think. I don't even remember, right? I have to go looking for it. But people forget about this one. One of the questions that came up recently on one of the forums, I think, was, hey, you know, I just deployed something to all my systems on accident, right? Because I didn't test my query, and how do I test my query better? Well, why didn't you just go into the query section and run your query there, and you can see the exact results without ever having any risk of having a deployment because you never deploy anything to a query. So they're there. Definitely go use them. They're a forgotten piece that I think have a lot of value to them. It's one of those ways to get data quickly out of Config Manager directly in the console. One of the things most people don't realize, you can copy and paste straight out of the console now, right? So anything that's in the data pane, you can just go ahead and select it. I don't think you can do a CTRL-A in Kim's terms, but you can actually go in and select it. Hit Control-C, right? You're not going to right-click and hit a copy, but you can hit Control-C, and now you can dump that into Notepad, and now you have your data there too. So for a lot of quick and dirty answers, there's no reason to do anything formal. There's lots of different informal ways for you to actually get your data out. So SSRS, how many of you have tried to write reports in here? How many of you are much unhappy about the classic versus SSRS? Shame on you. Go, there you go. So at the end of the day, and I'm going to show you a really quick demo, SSRS is just a query just like the classic reports was. You have to do a little bit of pre-configuration, but you can get it to the point where it's just a query that you dump in SSRS when you write your reports. But if you're still not convinced, if you still want something else quick and easy, there are lots of other choices out there. These are all essentially free. Some of these are kind of developer-type tools. Toad is definitely a developer-type tool. They look a little bit like SQL Management Studio. Art is one I found. I didn't load it up. It's on SourceForge. It's free. But it's actually looked almost exactly like classic web reports. It was a JBoss web server, so there was some other pieces to actually set up. So I didn't really want to go through that exercise. But if that's all you really want is that simple query, then there are solutions out there for you. Crystal Reports is a classic one, right? At the end of the day, this is just SQL data. You don't have to use SSRS if you don't want to. If you just loathe SSRS, you can't say it, right, for whatever reason, because you've got a European accent and you just, you know, it's not a fun thing to do. there's other choices out there. And, of course, the one highlighted in blue, everyone's favorite, Garth's especially, is PowerShell, right? You can query SQL Server directly from PowerShell. And now, if anyone's, has anyone not opened the PowerShell console? Anyone, please? That's good, Greg. Good job. So I'm attributing that to Greg, right? So PowerShell has so much cool stuff in it, right? And now if we can actually dump our SQL data into PowerShell, into a PowerShell variable, we can all of a sudden use all of the power of PowerShell. That's a good saying there. Okay, so let's hope my keyboard is still working. I don't think I actually need it. It's working. That's a bonus. Gotta love Bluetooth. So we're gonna hop over here to my SQL Server. And the first thing is the one I was hitting on there last, so actually PowerShell. So within SQL Server, so this is actually my SQL Server, but there is a way to load this provider, just like all other PowerShell providers, on your workstation, right? So you don't actually have to go load that SQL Management Studio. You don't have to load any of these other tools on your client system. So now we can just do a simple command line. There we go. And obviously that's just a command line, but I'll blow it up because Zoom, it's working again. So SQL PS, that's all you have to do. If you have those providers loaded, or if you're on the SQL Server itself, you type SQL PS. And it's going to pull up a command prompt for you, right? The normal PowerShell command prompt with those providers actually loaded. And now I'm in PowerShell. And my up key, there it is, so I don't have to type it out. Right? It's a simple commandlet, invoke SQL command. I put in my database, so in this case SQL 1, or my database server SQL 1, my instance name, config manager, my database name, CMFTW, and then my query, right? In this case, it's just select star from VR system. And there's all my data that was actually, you know, that came back from discovery. Now if I go up again and I put my wonderful, and I have no idea where the home key is on this keyboard, and I will just put user equals. Of course, that now got dumped into my variable, which I can dump out in a table. Right? I can do all my manipulations now, all those normal things that I've done in PowerShell all along. I can do certain select things. So, you know, and this is obviously Greg and Kaido's specialty, so they'll be able to tell you lots of other cool things that you can do here. I can do name zero, so if I just want name zero, there I have those kind of things. And of course, there's export CSV, so if I just want to dump this to a CSV real quick, there's my report. Right, so a lot of those management business questions, it's nice to have pretty things for the CFO that walks down the hall, right? But if it's just your manager and you have a good rapport with your manager, right, and if you don't have a good rapport with your manager, that's something to work on, but that's a total aside. You know, if it's just your manager, this is probably all he wants, or at least it's the teaser, right? You can answer his business question, and now he can take that data forward. And he can say, hey, look, we did this query. Here's the data. It doesn't have to look pretty for informal things. Right, and now you've got all of that, and you can manipulate it. You can do all those wonderful kind of things with it. So another, I'll show you one of those little freeware tools, because I actually like this one. It's super small. It doesn't have an installation. So that's always a bonus for some of these little tools. if I can find the right system. There it is. It's called Query Express. Totally, it's no install. You just run Query Express, you kind of tell it the exact same information. So there's my server, SQL 1, Config Manager. I won't zoom that one in because it's nothing spectacular to see. And now I just want to run kind of the same query. Select star from V, R, well, do system. All right, nothing special there. And now I can hit go. And I typed, what did I type? Oh, I know I did. I didn't select the correct database. There we go. So I got to select my database. And there's my data, right? So no install is great. Now I can go get that data quick and informal. So if I'm sitting in my boss's office, hey, he asks a question, I can run something real quick and easy like this. And I can dump it out to a text file. I don't remember if this tool specifically has it. But if you go into SQL Management Studio, I can dump those out to a text file also. So if I go back into my SQL server, this is a query I'll show you in a minute, but I can actually write quick on the query results, do save results as. And there's my CSV at the bottom, right? So at the end of the day, BI isn't necessarily always about presentation. It's about the data, right? At the end of the day, if you get the CFO his answer that he wants, does he really care that there's pretty charts? No, not if you've already built up that rapport with him and can prove to him that this is the data that he actually needs. So another quick query here. Actually, I was going to do an SSRS demo for all of you SSRS naysayers. So what we're going to do is we're going to go into my other Config Manager box. Here's my CM box. And I'm going to actually launch SSRS, or the Report Builder, if I can launch IE. And did it do it again? Wow, Bluetooth. Bad Bluetooth. Okay, I can do it from the console then. So we'll go in here. And one of the things I did in there before was I created a custom folder in SSRS, right? So I have my custom folder. So this is kind of where we can actually start with SSRS really quick. We can actually create a template. So always have this template ready. So one of the questions always is, I want to make all my reports look exactly the same. Great. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'm going to start with the template. And I'm going to log in. But I can't do that. I'm toast. I will go to... Nope. Nice keyboard. Okay. Sorry. I can't show you that one without the keyboard. I'll go back over to SQL Server and show you one of the other queries that's in there. I'll put this up on my blog. Sorry. I was going to show you the subset of the SQL query reporting one. So if we go up to this query right here, and another thing you can do in SQL Server and in Management Studio that most people don't realize is we can have a bunch of these queries in an open query. We just highlight a single one and we hit go, and it's going to show us the exact data that we actually need. So in this case, I just did a search. Come on. Okay. I did a search for SDM. So this is all columns, or all tables. Which one is this one? This one's all columns that have the word SDM in it, or in this case, the character is SDM in it. So anything with SDM typically in the database is going to have XML in it. And so we're going to scroll over, and we're going to see something interesting with the XML in here. And actually, it's in the next one. These are all the table names, but if we do the... Let me do this query right here. So once again, the kind of the power of being able to select the specific queries. You're going to see that there's actually XML within this query. So this is configuration items. So all applications at the end of the day are configuration items. And we're going to have essentially all this data encoded in XML. Really kind of difficult to query. But the power of SQL Server and the power of SQL in general is we can actually go back in and we can embed XPath within our query. So I'll highlight this second query. And these are all part, this query is specifically part of the slides later on, so you don't have to copy these down or anything. And now we can actually pull pieces of that XML out. So you can see the digest there at the right again. But now you can see on the left, we can see the title of all my applications, because once again, they're configuration items. Right? So now we can actually pull all that information out. So they're doing all these kind of interesting things with SQL Server now, being able to do that. Another interesting thing you can do with XML within SQL Server is if we need to answer a question like putting all of my products on a single line. And that was this query that I had up before. So if I just queried for every single product that I have in SQL Server or on all of my systems, I'm going to get each one of them on a different line. Right? That's not necessarily friendly. Maybe I want them all on one single line. So I can use XPath again, and I can use some SQL, and I can put all those products for each specific computer in the environment on a single line. And you can see as I expand this thing over, now I have each of the different systems in my environment and all of the products on each one of those systems on a single line, right? You can't do that normally with SQL. So that answers a question, or maybe it makes your report look a little bit cleaner. You don't have to know any other little tricks in SSRS. You're not going to have to worry about any of those kind of things. Okay. So a couple of key SQL principles, and these are, once you start digging in, you're going to have to figure out what the difference is between these different types of joins. So there's really three types of joins. The third one listed there, you can do a right outer join also, but they're essentially the same thing. People typically do left outer joins. You can do a full join. No one ever really does this. There's some marginal value on occasion to actually getting all of the data out of the database. So real simple, we have two tables, right? We want to be able to correlate the data that's in those two tables. And we typically are going to use resource ID. That's the main thing that we're going to use in the Config Manager database, because everything's going back to that one single resource. But if we want to join these two tables together with the full join, it's essentially every row gets matched up with every other row, regardless of the condition. The condition actually gets thrown away in this case. So you can see, of course, we have 3 and 2. You guys can do the math. At that point, we, of course, have our 6 rows. It doesn't really matter. Not a whole lot of value in that. Our inner join, which is the more common one, and of course, if you just specify join, it's going to default to being an inner join. It's going to match up all the rows where the condition actually matches. So this is a good thing generally, because this is what we want. But if there's data missing, so in this case, Garth, right? Garth didn't have a color for whatever reason. I guess Garth has pink as a color. But if the row actually doesn't have a matching, or a matching value in the right table in this case, we just lost Garth. So your data may be off. If we're actually looking, hey, we want all users in their colors, even without colors, well, we just lost them. So that's not a good thing to have. And so sometimes, if you're not careful with your joins, you're actually going to lose data. So that's where the outer joins come in. Generally, it's going to be a left outer join, left being the left table, the first one that you specify in your query. We're going to match everything up that matches the condition, and anything else that doesn't match the condition, that doesn't have a match, we're going to add them in there also. So it's a real key one to know. It's real simple, but people forget this one often, and it's one of those ways that you're going to potentially lose data if you don't know the difference between these three. The subselect is another one that comes up. So the business question, I couldn't figure out how to put this one on the slide. The business question itself is, show me all of the systems that don't have access on them. Right, so the obvious way that a lot of folks would actually write this query is specifically to put exactly what I have up there, where it doesn't equal access. Well, the problem with that is SQL is a sequential query language, exactly what it says. So it's going to go through each and every row. So what does that mean? Right, it's going to hit that first row and says, oh, that's not access. That's part of my result set. Let's go to that second row. That's not access. Well, it's already in my result set. No big deal. And so on down the line. So ultimately, all three systems in this case, and these are all made-up table names, of course, and values. But all of those systems, all those computer names, are actually going to get added to my results set. Not a good thing. Doesn't answer my question at all. So bad query. Not a good thing to have. So what do we actually do? A subselect. There are actually other SQL constructs to do this, but this is the easiest way to actually do that. So first we need to find all the entities with that value. So we kind of turn that around so you can see there's a subquery. That's that bottom query up there. And that's exactly opposite of what we had initially. We want to find all the ones that have access. And that produces the table there on the left where it just has C, right? So it went through each one of those rows, found each one that actually had access in it. And there we go. We get our result set of C. But now that's a sub of the bigger query, which now says, hey, everybody that's not in that first result set, which of course gives us our answer. Very kind of simple concept. When you start writing bigger queries, you know, it looks real difficult. It can get real involved. But if you understand this real simple concept, it's pretty easy to do these kind of not in type things. There's that query I showed you specifically for XML data. It's all over the place within SQL Server itself. Like I said, all the configuration items have that SDM digest in there somewhere. It's encoded XML that SQL Server or the SQL language itself has no idea how to query. But using XPath, XPath is another nice little query language, we can actually extract those kind of that information out, and we're going to show you exactly what that information is, and it's going to return it just like a table. And so now you can, of course, use that directly within whatever queries you have, whether you're doing this in PowerShell, or at the end of the day, this is just SQL. So we can do that using PowerShell, just like I showed you. We can do this using SSRS, or whatever query tool that you have out there, because this is just going to get passed to SQL Server on the back end. And, oh my goodness, where'd that come from? It's working. I don't know what happened there. Did you do something, Garth? Is he in here? I don't know. Bluetooth. Somebody with a Bluetooth phone screwing with me in the front row? Brian? Okay, so let's crank up our SSRS here. Let's go back to CM1. Because this is kind of the, this is the real quick and easy one. Hey, I just have this query. I want to show it in SSRS. So let's get IE going. And I've got to pick the right site. So I typically like going into SSRS through the website. That is going to be slow because we're running out of time, of course. But I'm going to go into my custom here. Once again, I created this folder directly in SSRS, so that's another common question. Hey, how do I add these folders? Well, you just come in here, and you can see this nice little new folder button. Yay. So here's my template. I pre-created this one last night. I'm going to go ahead and click Edit in Report Builder, and it's going to do my nice little thing that I'm sure everybody's seen, and take a couple minutes, of course, to come up because it's got to download. So you can actually pre-install Report Builder itself on your client systems, and so that piece will potentially go a lot faster. As I get all the other windows out of the way. How many windows did you open? Yep. So this is, you know, this is just a pre-created template. Now all of my reports, if I start from this template all the time, right, there's a little bit of upfront work. They're all going to look the same. And I know I picked yellow there for my report title, so obviously it doesn't look good on the screens. You can pick whatever colors you want. You want to kind of match your organizational structure. You know, once again, if you're going to give this report to your CFO, even if you're going to give it to your manager, you know, sometimes style does count for some extra points. I can add in the data source. So this is the thing that most people are actually afraid of. But Config Manager already created a data source for you. So if I just go into Add Data Source, once again, I did this last night, there's a single data source that's there. If I click Browse, it's going to give me my actual folder structure that I would see in SSRS. And it's typically all the way at the end. It's already there. You don't have to create anything here. It's not a scary piece. It's already there. So what does this do? This defines the credentials to actually access the database initially. Right? Ultimately, it's always going to use pass-through authentication. We're always going to make sure that that user has permissions to do that. But this is going to do the initial data collection or the report collection type activities. So that's there. Once I put that in the template, I'm never actually having to do it again. At that point, all I have left is a data set. And what's a data set? At the end of the day, it's just a query. So I'm going to embed it in my report. Look at that. It's really just that simple. So I can do something like select and whatever any of those queries are that you had before. I'll jump over to a final report and show you that one a little bit better. Where are you? Edit in Report Builder. It's always the last one. That one's taking a little bit longer to come up. But you can see it's using the exact same template that I had yesterday. Now, I added a couple of other little things. Literally, this took me 5 minutes to build. I have two queries in here. Notice it's the exact same data source. Because I used the template, I didn't actually have to do anything different. All I had to do was define data sets. Now, one of the limitations that happened in classic reporting, and actually I don't think it was really there, you could get around it, was putting multiple queries in the same report, right, so you can have things. Well, that's all you have here. We're just putting multiple data sets, and now we can use those specific ones. They're just called out a little bit differently. But if I look at this data set, ultimately, and I look at the query behind it, and I don't want to authenticate, it's just that simple query, right? There's nothing spectacular about this. This is my client agent version. So if you notice, the report title for this was kind of an upgrade tracker, so I can track my WUA upgrade version and my actual client agent version. So that's all that's in there. And now when I run this report, that's the only data that's going to come back. Now I put these two little pretty graphs, these two pretty charts on here. Those were super simple to add too. I never use the wizards when I add things. I simply go to insert, and you can drag your table over. And now the magic, and I'll add another table in here. It's going to be kind of bogus at this point. But I can just drag and drop things exactly where I want them, right? I don't have to do anything special here. If I don't want to add pretty colors, I don't have to do those kind of things. It's really that simple. You create the template, you add your data source, you make your colors, you put your logo at the top there, and now you just use this same report all the time. And now you do have all the power of SSRS, right? So for those of you that are stuck on classic reporting, what are the things you couldn't do, right? I couldn't export to PDF. I couldn't export to Word. I couldn't export to Excel. I couldn't set up subscriptions that dumped them into SharePoint. I couldn't set up subscriptions that dumped them to email, right? So those are all the things that when you're kind of stuck on a classic technology, you got to remember there's a lot of cool things that are coming. But, you know, it's real simple to boil certain things down. And at the end of the day, if it is just that simple query, right, getting in there is not a big deal to do that. So you can see my nice pretty charts, which my CFO will be happy about. And really, the CFO probably doesn't even care that the data is there. He doesn't care what the data is. He just cares that you took time to go and cover the data to create him a report so that you know what you're actually doing, right? At the end of the day, you're proving yourself to those guys. They, if you can do that, then they don't really care what the data is. Okay, the last takeaways. Do I have it on there? Oh, yeah. So I think the fourth one on there, the Learn SQL in PowerShell. Obviously, I think everyone in here said that they've at least opened the PowerShell console. But there's a lot of power in there. There's a lot of power in SQL. You really kind of have to know some of the basics. There's lots of great websites out there to learn just a handful of the basics. Most of the things I was doing, obviously, were in SQL. Even in what some of the things that Kim was doing was ultimately in WQL, which is a subset of SQL. So you're essentially using the exact same thing. You really need to figure out what those are. Everything ends up in SQL Server, and that's why those things are specifically important. But at the end of the day, like I said, it's about answering those business questions. You've got to make sure that you're doing the business intelligence types things, answering those questions for your boss, and making sure that you're an asset and not just that technical guy that sits in the corner, right, that people kind of know what your name is, but you're actually solving business challenges. In this world where, you know, things are super competitive, that'll make you the valuable person in the office and maybe get that promotion if you want it. And that's collecting data. Anybody want a Bluetooth keyboard?
Before you guys leave the room, I first want to apologize for my little speaking lapse earlier. Didn't want to offend anybody. Next to that, if you're looking at closing out your day with a fun and entertaining session, I do have a session together with Kent Agerlund later tonight at 4:30 where we have our Config Manager Jeopardy quiz, which is going to be an educational / entertaining kind of session. Most of you probably have heard from Kent Agerlund by now. He's another Config Manager MVP. He's actually a Danish Config Manager MVP that a lot of you probably have seen in the forums. But what a lot of people don't know is that Kent actually doubles and has a second career as a stand-up comedian in Denmark. So it's going to be a fun and entertaining session. So if you feel like closing out your day with some good laughs, yet some education, make sure you'll be there. It's at 4:30 and we're at South Seas F. Hope to see you guys there. Have fun.